Continuation of interview by Dr. L. H. Thomas with W. E. Davis of Regina, September the 1st, 1970.
You see, they didn't have to go and live on the farm, they could stay at home. But if they were over the 7 mile limits, they were only required to live there 6 months of the year. The other 6 months they would allow to, some of them went away to work in the bushes during the winter months, you know, to get some money to help themselves along, or went out to work on farms and so on. But they, again, they couldn't start working until they were 18. That's the time they start to improve their homesteads. Then they would see, by the time, they said that 3 years to get their titles, then they'd be about 21, you see. Get their titles on the land. And when we came here, of course, all they were asking was to cultivate 30 acres in that 3 years. That's only just 10 acres a year, see, that was all that they were required. And there was no requirement for any buildings of any amount, but that's changed, of course, a lot since then. That's the way it was worked out there.
Yes, yes. Would you say that the first years, the first 2 or 3 or 4 years in the settlement were particularly hard, tough for the migrants?
Well, no, I wouldn't say they were.
No more so than
hard,
for the settlers.
Of course, the climate was,
that
thing that we had to get accustomed to, you see.
Yes.
Because there you don't get any lower than, 30 or, although they've had frost there, in there too, you see, in the Argentine,
yes.
When we were thinking frost there. I can't remember sleet there. We were there.
Were there any significant number of people who withdrew, who left the settlement and either went back to the Argentine or went into work in the towns, or Winnipeg, shall we say?
Yes, quite a few. Some returned to Wales,
mm-hmm.
and some returned to back to Patagonia, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that, and others went to various places in the
in Canada.
Yes.
Now, am I right in thinking that very few of the people spoke anything Spanish and Welsh initially? Were there just a very few English speakers?
There weren't very many.
No.
No, there were very few. Of course, my mother was very fluent in English.
Yeah.
She'd been teaching in Wales before coming out.
Mm-hmm.
She was very fluent. Of course, her father, he didn't have hardly any education at all, you know, because he was left there before he was 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, all he had was a little Welsh, but he had to work when he was very young.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, I know what that means. I gather that the settlers were anxious to establish schools promptly where the children could learn English quickly. Is that your...
Oh yes. See, we came here in June 1902, and the Llewellyn School District, number 807, it was opened on the 4th of May, 1904, so we were practically almost 2 years before we had a school.
Yes.
And I can remember that very well.
Yes.
I often wonder, you know, what the teachers of the day would do. There was about 30 pupils there that morning, and you could count on the one hand with the number that understood English. The rest of them had no English at all.
Yes.
We had no English, but we were bilingual then. We could speak Spanish, I could speak Spanish as fluent as I can. I speak English today when I first came out, but that's gone. I was too young to keep it up, you see.
Yes.
But we kept up the Welsh.
Yeah. Well, that's the point I wanted to come at now. The Welsh was kept up relatively well.
Yes, for a good many years.
Mm-hmm. Just as it had been in the Argentine.
Oh yes.
Yes. But unlike the situation originally in the Argentine, where the idea had really been to establish a separate Welsh state, that objective had long since been given up. I take it from what you say, Mr. Davies, then, that taking that settlement as a whole, that you could say that the success of the settlers was comparable to the success of settlers of other origins in adjacent areas.
I would say so, yes.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about the situation when the first war broke out? Were there many who enlisted and went overseas?
A good number.
Mm-hmm.
Good number.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are lying in France, that are born in the Argentine.
Yes.
They found their resting in the first war.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sure this was true of many areas of the prairies where United Kingdom settlers established themselves. Yes. The interwar years were, I suppose, similar to other areas of Saskatchewan in terms of the relative success of farming. You didn't have in the 30s the same drought conditions up there, did you?
No, not in parts we didn't have that severe drought. It was dry enough, of course,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like some parts from the south, more to the southwest here.
Yes.
We didn't have that.
Yes. Was the wheat pool an active factor in the community?
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes. I guess I'm one of the few original ones that I didn't know that people came there in 1923. Of course, now I'm out of farming, I'm out of it altogether, but
mm-hmm.
certainly there's not many of them left around the community now. They're all young, the younger generation coming now.
Yes. Well, now, that was another question that I was interested in. The children of the Welsh settlers have remained on the land, at least some of them, I take it, and have taken over the family farm, or have they tended to move away?
Well, there's some of them still, but very few of them remain there on the farm. There are some, of course.
Yes.
They've gone to various occupations, you know.
Yes. What would your guesstimate be that 40 or 50 people of Welsh background now farming there, or more than that?
No, I don't think there'd be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty hard to say, you know.
Yes.
But there's.
I suppose there was an effort in the early years to keep up the musical tradition of the.
Oh yes, that was. Kept up. We had our singing festivals and was to draw them from all parties to come there and just listen to the singing.
Yes.
Without. Competitive festivals there for years was the Steadwood, you see, that was held there for a good many years.
Mm.
Oh, yes. And then the Wells Church was organized there in 1904.
Now, which denomination was that?
Well, this was the Calvinistic Methodist.
Yes.
Not the Methodist, the Calvinistic Methodist. Or as they are known today, the Presbyterians.
Ah, yes.
See, that's, there we are. In 1905, became affiliated with that denomination in the United States. Mm. And from there we had help to keep a minister, and we had a loan to build our church. The church was built in 1910. Mm-hmm. Before that we hold our services in the school, you see. Mm-hmm. And there's another, the congregations, they have their services in school at the Glyndŵr district, mm-hmm. another 5 miles away, you see. That's another good Welshmere.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Yes, and...
And did they succeed in getting in Welsh clergymen in the early years, Welsh-speaking clergymen?
Oh, yes.
Did I understand you to say that there was an Anglican church in
There's an Anglican church. There's a St. David's Anglican Church in Bangor, and then there's the St. David's, there's St. Asaph's in the Llewellyn district.
I see.
And that's on the farm that my father bought, bought the farm on which that church is situated.
Yes. Well, now, I'm a little surprised at this, because I tend to think of Welsh people as being nonconformist rather than Anglican, but some of them were Anglican, were they?
Well, very few of them. Mm-hmm. See, but the Anglicans that go to the church, they were English settlers.
And the settlers coming in, yes.
Coming in, you see.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But they did have a Welsh service there for years in the Anglican church, too. Yeah. The man came out there in 1906, I think. It was Reverend Ivor Jones. And he was there in 1907 or 8, I think, when he left. And we didn't have a minister at that time, see. And my oldest sister, she was married, and it's the first marriage that took place in that St. Asaph church, Minister Reverend Jones, Ira Jones.
Yeah.
He left there and he went to Prince Albert, but he's, I suppose he's in Denver for many years.
Well, tell me a bit about the centenary celebrations in Patagonia that you attended. That must have been quite a thrill for you.
Yes, it was quite a thrill, of course, going all that way.
Did you fly down? Or?
Yes, we'd never been in a plane before. And then the three sisters, myself and the other sister, she lives in Port Angeles, in the state of Washington, said she wanted to go, but the doctor wouldn't. Miss Doris said it was too long a journey. And her husband, he was born out there too, you know, and he had a lot of relatives there. So he came with us, so the five of us went together. He came here from Port Angeles to Regina and joined us here, and we went.
Mm-hmm.
We had quite a good time there. We were well received there by everybody. Of course, there's some there that still remember that, you know. We met quite a few of the old children we used to go to school with.
Mm-hmm.
We met quite a few of them.
Yes, yes.
And, it's been a real rally. We had a banquet and all that, and there's no admission yet. We were just going on the buses, just walked on there. Just a second, I'll get you mine.
Yes, well, that's a very nice medal, Mr. Davies. And you must have enjoyed
that. That picture is 105 years old. That's my father.
Well?
That's my grandmother, that's his brother. There's another one there, he died on the sea.
I see. I have a picture a copy of a picture of the 1865 settlers, and also a picture taken on the ship bringing the group to Canada. I don't think that all of the people who came to Canada are in the picture, but quite a number are, and I hope to reproduce these two pictures when I do this little article on the settlement.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an interesting article written by a Bryn Williams in the British journal, the Geographical Journal, on the Patagonian Welsh back in 1961 with a number of interesting photos in it.
Yes, I was surprised. You know, I went back and just, I met some of the, I knew there were children of the old settlers like my father was, you know, that mm-hmm. like I was, they were there. And they said that he's got quite a few errors in his books.
Mm.
And I said, well, how is that?
Mm.
Because he said, I remember the old gentleman, his name was Richard Jones, but he took the name Berwyn after he, but there was another Jones there, Richard Jones there, and he was from that range of mountains there, where the Berwyn Mountains, you see. He came from close there, so he took the name Berwyn.
Mm.
So he was known as, and we used to call him Berwyn, that's all.
Mm.
And I remember him quite well. And he used to be the recorder there and everything else. And they said, well, he said, those records were lost in the flood of 1905 after you left.
Mm.
And then there's nobody afterwards. And he's got most of his information, you see, from other people. And some of them had no connection with the first pioneers. So then there, I had one book here, it's not here now, my sister had it. And in that he has, I know that one is an error.
Mm.
He's talking about the group that went up with Colonel Fontana to explore the country in 1885.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they were a group of young, single, romantic young men. They were married people amongst them. My father was amongst them, and he was married and had two children.
Is this the group that founded the settlement up in the foothills of the Andes?
Yeah, that's right, yes.
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 Do you know Richard Llewellyn's novel, Up into the Singing Mountain?
No, I haven't seen that book, no.
It is a sequel to How Green Was My Valley.
Oh, yes.
And it's a very good novel, and it's mm-hmm. set in the Patagonian settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And the culmination of it is the movement of this group up into that area, or at least the main character goes up with some others after the floods of I guess 1899 the turn of the century.
I remember that flood.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
Yes, I was only a youngster, but I remember it quite well.
Yeah.
I was lost in that.
Yeah.
Where are the...
No, that's fine.
Where are the big pictures that you had taken?
Well, look at those others that I took. They'd be more interesting for you.
Have a bit of this. Just repeat, Mr. Davies, about the group who went to down to the anniversary celebrations and the congregational singing.
Well, see, there's a group of, there are 72 there from Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor of this journal, Envis of the Rainbow, mm-hmm. he was there. And he's also the secretary of the Union of the Welsh People in Dispersion, as they're called. He's the secretary of that too. He was there. And the others, the leader was Dr. J. Alvin Davis, that regrettably has since passed away. They were there, but the singing was there, of course, it's just as good as it ever been in Wales.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't be any better.
Uh-huh.
No,
yeah.
Couldn't be any better.
Yeah.
We had real good time there.
The Welsh people in that province are quite influential in the government, aren't they, of Patagonia?
Yes, some of them. There was one of them, well, I knew his brother. His brother used to be in school with me.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Minister of Interior in there, Hayden Davis. And incidentally, his mother was the first child born after they landed there. And she's born in these caves where they... See, there's a rock there, they call it the Tosca, and it's very soft. If you've got a good nail, if you can carve your name on it. And they dug these caves in the rocks, and that's where they spent about, I think they were there about 6 weeks before they started the journey into the valley. Then they took some of the children by boat. These were taking about 2 days to go by boat, then go up the Chubut River.
Yes.
And they were met with a storm and they were lost at sea, and they were away for about 2 weeks before they landed, and they ran out of water and out of provisions, so it was pretty hard on the children, you know.
Yes.
Pretty hard. And I'm not sure whether Dad was amongst that group or not, whether he did go with that group or whether he walked with the rest of them, because I heard him talking quite a bit about them going across these sandy, rocky places, you know, and about one man would put his stuff in the wheelbarrow, you know, and he started up, but the whole thing was digging down into the sand. He had to leave that and throw the things on his back and carry them there. He couldn't make any headway at all.
Yeah.
But there's loose gravel. I heard him talking of that, but I don't know for certain, you know, whether he went.
Well, they established very good relations with the Indians, didn't they?
Oh, yes, yes.
And the Indians taught them how to hunt with the boa and the lasso.
My father was an expert with this lasso and his bolas.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one, a short one, about a yard long, two little. They used to get the rabbits and partridges or anything like that. See, if you see a partridge running on the street, I just throw that. Just take the head clean off.
Mm-hmm.
And just drop right on and stun it. See, and it'd be dropped
mm-hmm.
right there.
Mm-hmm.
But the head would be gone clean when you only want to.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty. And when we first came out here, you see, your father and mother and a sister, they went out to a farm there about in the Crescent district to buy a cow. And they got this cow, and the calf was with this out sucking, you see. And the old farmer says, well, we'll have to drive her into the barn, you see, to catch this calf. And he told my sister, you stay there. And then, and Dad had his rope in his hand. We had no lariat of wood, but just had an ordinary rope, you see. And this calf went by my sister, all this wood worth. And the old man says, why'd you let that calf go? And the next moment he saw the calf was lying down on the ground there. He'd got it, you see, lad. I sued the calf, and he was lying down, pulling, and he was lying right down there. And the hired man on the field there, he called him there. He says, come here, says, I want you to see what some of these new immigrants can do, is it? He was crazy. Well, he said, well, I laughed over that.
Yes.
Then Mr. McNutt, well, I think I'm right in saying that he was the first speaker in the Saskatchewan Lynch, Thomas McNutt.
Yes.
I think he was the first. I knew him quite well. I knew the son too, Russell. Knew him too quite well. And he gave a lot of cattle out, you know, and shares to them there, about 25 head of cattle, some we had, young stuff like that. Some of the young boys got them out and brought them out to the district there, and they got to a certain place where they were to meet. And Dad went there, and when he got there, here they were trying to get these cows into the barn, you know, to catch them, and he said. And then we got a rope, he'd taken some rope with him, because he had two coming there. And they said, yes, we have some rope here. I said, all right. So he started off, and he was cutting a piece off every time he lassoed one cow, cut a piece off, and till in the end he only had a short piece before he finished, he said. But he cut them all for them.
Well, that's very interesting.
He was very, and he could do braiding, you know, just, he'd learned that, he'd braid anything with the leather. No matter how many strands you had or anything. Because they did most of their own lariats there, you see, the lariats there were leather.
Mm-hmm.
And they braided the things wet, they never tanned the hide.
Mm-hmm.
They just shaved the hair off, you know, and they braided them when they were real wet. And then after they got it finished, they tied onto their saddle, and then they put the horse on there to pull for all it was worth. And then after that, they'd soak it in oil. The iron ring on the end of it, you see.
I see, yes.
There's fire in. I saw one of them breaking too,
mm-hmm.
just before we came here.
Mm. The settlers weren't able, of course, to bring much in the way of property with them. There wasn't much room on the boat for them to bring.
No, there wouldn't be much room.
But what sort of things did they bring?
It was mostly
Household articles.
Well, we have no regrets. Father said he had never no regrets of coming to Canada anyway.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
See, the the reason that he really left there was not so much the flooding, but the instability of the government. While we were there, I was introduced to the governor of the Chubut province, you see, by a relative of mine, shook hands with him. Two or 3 days later, he was out.
Yes, still goes on.
Still goes on. Yes, still goes on.
Yes. Well, of course, the Argentine government originally had pursued a more or less hands-off policy, had let the settlers carry on with their own schools, their own teachers, and really their own self-government.
That went on for 10 years. Uh-huh. See? Mm-hmm. 10 years, I had that in the 10 years. That, and then there was little, bit by bit, they
yes.
came in. And then, of course, the schools went out and they had to take the Spanish, the
yes.
national school. Yes. You had to go there until you were 14.
Yes.
After
yes.
that. But the Welsh people, they built a school there. That contributed to it before he came out here. And it was opened, I think, about 1912, mm-hmm. at a kind of a high school, mm-hmm. to teach Welsh and English. Mm-hmm. And they had a teacher from Wales there, a Mr. Edmonds, and his wife. He was a BSc, you know, and his wife was a BA. And they both taught in that school. Mm-hmm. And then there's two or three from the colony went back to Wales, where they was then graduated from the University of Aberystwyth, mm-hmm. and then went back and taught in that school, the English and the Welsh. Mm-hmm. But of course, they got no support from the government for it, and eventually it got that the Welsh people couldn't keep it up. Mm-hmm. So that was had to be closed. So a good number of them there today are trilinguists in that colony today.
Mm-hmm.
My cousins there are.
Remarkable, yes.
They have got the English, the Spanish, and the Welsh, because of this school. There's quite a number of them like that there.
Yes.
And they're now, they're teaching the English in the schools there now too, you know. So that's going to be quite a help.
Yeah.
That's the thing that they're starting to do there now.
Yes. Well, in the 1890s, as I understand it, another source of worry to, I take it particularly the mothers, of the young men who were getting to be of military age was that the boys would be in the Argentine army with a lot of rough types.
Oh yes, yes, that was quite.
And they didn't look forward to that with
no,
much,
no.
Pleasure.
And it was a battle of it. They used to drill on Sundays, you know. And
yeah.
That was very much, I guess. they won out on that. They fought. They went out on that there was no drilling to be on.
Yes, the president promised them.
Yes, they go with that. And the Argentine national anthem, as he was in unison. And in 1890, Roca, he was the president then, he said he was going to visit this colony at the time. And there was an old, there he'd been a bandmaster and he was well known in music and a bard too. His name was William Jones, but he was there. He was never known as William Jones. He was called the Old Band. Everybody knew it was the Old Band. And he had a bardic and a musical named Gwynedd. That was his bardic. And he harmonized the national anthem, see, for the Four Voices. And he trained a choir to sing it by the time Roca came down. And when he heard the singing, he says, "That's going to be it." And that's the one they were singing there when we were now back in the 100 years, was the harmonies of this old William Johnson band, as they called it. That's the harmony that was sung there, played and sung there, at the 100th anniversary.
Isn't that
interesting? Yes. Yeah. Yes. He was, I used to say, he was really a musician, all right.
Natural musician.
Oh, yes. Well, he'd been an old bandmaster, you know, in Wales, in North Wales. He was from Ffestiniog. Yes, it was quite a great. And he went under the name of Gwynedd. And on this harmony, as you see, it says that the harmony, the air is by so-and-so, and the harmony by Quine.
Mm.
Isn't there? It's William Joseph by Quine.
Oh.
His musical and bardic name, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, that's very...
No, he was quite a character.